From Michigan Public, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, we're all about primary election results for Michigan. First, the big winner of the night, Abdul El-Sayed, who narrowly won the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate.
And what we showed is that the power of our many is greater than the power of their money.
Then, what results and turnout from across the state can tell us about some different congressional districts.
Hillary Scolton is in good shape for now, but the Grand Rapids results in the Senate race, Kent County went for El-Sayed to the same degree that Washtenaw County, Ann Arbor did.
And on It's Just Politics, Zoe and Rick will be talking with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell on the future of the Democratic Party.
We cannot just be anti-President Trump. I have said that repeatedly and will say it again.
All that coming up today on Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Democratic Party of Michigan is on reset mode.
There are many other people that want to see things shaken up. They don't think elected officials that are on either side, Republican or Democrat, are doing enough.
Later this hour, we'll have some thoughts on the new energy in the party after an election with high turnout. But first, what a night with the returns last night. Election operations proceeded quite smoothly. There were only a few races close enough to need more than the night to resolve, but one of them was an awfully big contest. Dr. Abdul El-Sayed has edged his opponent, Congresswoman Haley Stevens, by less than one percentage point to win the Democratic Party's nomination for November's election to the U.S. Senate.
You're not supposed to be able to beat $70 million of outside spending, a record amount of money spent in a campaign against a Democrat in a primary in any campaign. You're not supposed to be able to beat that. And what we showed is that the power of our many is greater than the power of their money.
Abdul El-Sayed, welcome back to Stateside.
April, I feel like we just did this.
We did.
I'm very excited to be back.
What does it feel like to step onto the stage of history?
Well, look, I right now just I'm focused on trying to make sure that we can bring everyone together to finish what we started 15 months ago. I've had the privilege of being hosted in backyards and basements and VFW halls and listen to people's pain and also the purpose that brings them together. And we have 13 weeks left to go to finish off this movement to get money out of politics, put money back in pockets, pass Medicare for all. And I'm grateful for just how many folks gave me their stake in democracy, for all the folks who signed up to volunteer. We had 12,000 volunteers knocking 10,000 doors a day. But the work is not done. And you look at the other side of this, we have a responsibility to hold Donald Trump and his corrupt administration accountable. We have a responsibility to make sure they don't get a yes man vote. We have a responsibility to make sure that he doesn't get one more vote to confirm yet another crooked Supreme Court justice. And we have a responsibility to stand up for the things that brought us together. So we got 13 more weeks left to work. I want to bring everybody together. So if you supported me, I am so grateful for you. If you did not, welcome. The water is fine. We've got so much work to do and so much more that unites us than divides us.
You had a conversation with Haley Stevens as the last of the numbers were being crunched on the race. Can you tell us what that conversation was like?
I mean, look, it was a contentious primary. We've both been running since last April. And, you know, obviously when you're running against an opponent from the same party, there's a lot you agree on, but there are the things that you disagree on that you tend to magnify. But, you know, both of us agreed that we have a responsibility to defeat Trumpism, and Mike Rogers is the worst manifestation of that in Michigan. And she said, you know, she is absolutely excited to do all she can to defeat him. I'm just so grateful for that. I've been on the losing side of a primary before. It's not fun. But at the same time, we know what the work is. And I'm just grateful that there is so much more that brings us together. I'm looking forward to working to take on Mike Rogers and to defeat Trumpism. But it's going to take all the folks who voted for her and all the folks who voted for me and a lot of folks who voted for Trump three times and a lot of folks who didn't vote at all to come together to recognize what we can do when we finally build a political movement that's not bought and paid for by big corporations, but instead is about delivering for real people. And that's the work that animates everything we've been doing. It's the work that inspires me. It's the work that has been the core of the conversations I've gotten to share for 13 months. And I'm looking forward to 13 more weeks.
When you have a primary that's decided so closely like this, it's very clear that there are some voters who really felt Haley's message and who were more comfortable with her approach. And there were a great many Michigan voters in the Democratic Party who were much more comfortable with what you had to say. I mean, it kind of feels to me like there's a lot that's still unresolved between these two groups.
You know, I think that might be true. And not everybody who votes for you agrees with you on everything. But I want us to step back and ask a few basic questions about what it is democracy ought to be for. Because I think, you know, whether you voted for Congresswoman Stevens or me, you probably agree that the power of money in politics is too big. You probably agree that people ought to be able to afford their groceries. You probably agree that people ought to have more health care brought to you by the government rather than less. You probably agree that we should not be fighting this stupid war in Iran. You probably agree that housing ought to be something we provide more of. You probably agree that we need to be able to drink clean water and breathe clean air. When it comes to Mike Rogers and his agenda, this was a guy who was in Congress for 14 years and never saw a corporate PAC check he did not want to take, to the point where he voted to raise prescription drug prices, I don't know how many times, helped to architect the legislation that kicked off the opioid epidemic. 600,000 deaths later, he has still to fully reckon with his responsibility, because he left Congress to make $14 million he can't account for trading on the relationships he made while he was in Congress. But I guess $14 million is not enough. A McMansion in Florida is not enough. So he's back. He lost last time with Donald Trump on the ballot. So he's a historically bad candidate, and also just somebody who is willing to corrupt his office to pick our pockets to do corporate bidding. And I think there's so much more that connects folks in our movement, folks who voted for Congresswoman Stevens, then divides us. And so we're looking forward to continuing to reach out to folks to build that big tent that the party is supposed to be to defeat Mike Rogers and Trumpism.
If there's one thing we've learned in this primary cycle, it's that the polls can be less than helpful if you're actually trying to be predicting the winner as a layperson. However, there is one I have to ask you about. There was a Glenn Gariff poll in the final weeks of July that showed Mike Rogers with a pretty comfortable 10-point lead ahead of you. What do you take away from that?
I think, as we all learned yesterday, polls don't vote, people do. So if you're worried about that, then we got work to do. Because worrying is not going to change the outcome. What's going to change the outcome is grabbing a clipboard and knocking on some doors. What's going to change the outcome is making a contribution to a campaign. What's going to change the outcome is deciding to put your shoulder into the work. And so for anybody who's out there worrying, what I will tell you is that we have built a movement of people, by people, and for people. We built a movement that took it on the chin, $70 million. They set records for how much money they spent to beat us. But where they couldn't answer us was a community of people believing in something coming together. And I think that's what's going to ultimately beat Trumpism. That's what's going to beat Mike Rogers. And I'm asking folks to come and join us now. If you're worried about those polls, help us beat them.
You've been resolute about rejecting corporate money during the primary cycle. Does that change now?
No.
What about the responsibilities of candidates toward how dark money is spent in their races?
Look, I wish we could abolish the entire system of dark money. I mean, when you look at the outside spending, the 11-to-1 gap, that was all dark money spending against us. You know, I think all of us would agree that if we could abolish that whole system, we should. And I'll tell you, on day one in my time in the Senate, I will start working on that, and I hope to abolish that system. Right now, though, I just want you to understand that Mike Rogers is bringing $45 million to bear on day one in this campaign. Likely, if you turn on the television, you're probably seeing some vile attack ads about me, which is kind of a normal thing now, because apparently that's just what happens in Michigan. People will turn on the TV and see a vile attack ad about me. But I want you to think about who pays for that. All the corporations, DTE, Blue Cross, all these folks who want to raise your rates, raise your premiums, pick your pocket when you go shopping at the grocery store. And we have to beat them, and then we have to beat the system that enables them. I'm grateful for support from folks like the UAW, from the National Nurses United, from the Working Families Party. And right now, they've come together to try and push back against the insane amount of corporate and special interest money that we're seeing on the other side. But when I get to the U.S. Senate, I want to end that whole system. Because ask yourself whether or not yesterday's primary would have been nearly as divisive if there hadn't been $70 million spent against one candidate.
You were outspent this much, but you still managed to succeed. I mean, what should we take away from the value and the role of money in politics?
Well, if the many come together, they can beat the money. But we weren't supposed to win that race. This is a pretty historic outcome. Nobody's ever been outspent that much at all, ever. And certainly nobody's ever beaten it. But our movement, inspired by the idea that we can get money out of politics, put money in your pocket, pass Medicare for all, we beat it. But here's the thing about it. Democracy is a team sport. It requires people deciding that they're going to be on the team. And we're asking to build the biggest possible team. Because if you ask yourself, what world do we want to live in? One where Mike Rogers is our next United States Senator and Donald Trump goes unchecked? Or one where we win this race, we flip the balance of power in the Senate, we hold Donald Trump accountable for all that he is doing, and we get on to the work of ending the dark money, of passing Medicare for all, of holding big corporations accountable for the monopolies that they try to build, of taxing billionaires their wealth, of rebuilding our schools, of keeping our money here instead of sending it abroad. Those couldn't contrast more. And so we need you on this team.
We have about a minute left. What do your next 7 days look like?
Hopefully at some point I get to sleep. I also really miss my kids.
Yeah. I notice you're always wearing these Taylor Swift style bracelets with, I think, your girls' names on them.
So one of them says Best Dad. My daughter Emily made this for me. And then the other one says Servant Leader for the People. Our team has taken to making these. And this was a custom one that they made for me. My name, Abdul Al-Sayed, means Servant Leader. And so I always wear it just to remind me what we're fighting for. But I, you know, there's a lot of conversations I need to have. We've got a big rally on Friday with the Democratic ticket and former Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. And then we're going to be right back on the trail. Just remember, it's only 3 months, right? 13 weeks that we have left to work. So we're going to be hitting that trail, hitting it hard and continuing to build this movement to get money out of politics, put money in pockets, and pass Medicare for all.
Your phone's already been ringing all the time we've been sitting here. Somebody needs to take that thing away from
you.
I know. Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed is the Democratic Party nominee for this November's election for the U.S. Senate. Abdul, thank you as always for your time.
April, thanks for having me. It's always a privilege.
We need to take a quick break now. When we come back, what we can learn from voter turnout in yesterday's primaries.
Well, we shouldn't be surprised in a historical sense because we're no stranger to close elections. And there was a lot of engagement on both sides in the Democratic primary.
That's in a moment. You're with Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Okay, let's get the macro view of what just happened in yesterday's elections. The Democratic primary between Abdul El-Sayed and Haley Stevens, of course, got a lot of attention. But we also have your major party choices for governor lined up. Republican Congressman John James won his primary. He'll face Democratic Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson in November. We've heard candidates talking about a wide range of issues, from the cost of housing and groceries to U.S. immigration policies, Gaza and Iran. These debates may be shaping more than just the outcome of state primaries. Matt Grossman is a professor at Michigan State University who also leads the school's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. He is also the director of the Michigan Political Leadership Program at MSU. Matt Grossman, welcome to Stateside.
Good to be with you.
What did we see last night overall in terms of Michigan's voter turnout and, I guess, party mobilization?
Voter turnout was high overall, but it was overwhelmingly on the Democratic side. I think compared to the last election, I think Democratic votes at the top were up like 60% and Republican votes were down like 10 or 12%. So Democrats more motivated to participate and had more of a race to participate in.
You know, I keep thinking about the fact that this is Donald Trump's second term, but it's not his second consecutive term. However, when I think about two-term presidents and how elections tend to go at the end of it, the end of George W. Bush's second term, the end of Barack Obama's, I mean, it seems to me this is a time when an opposite party of the presidents tends to do well. Do you think what we've seen is typical?
Well, midterm elections tend to go against the party of the president, and that is a pattern that goes back more than 100 years, so not new. Bill Clinton was actually somewhat of an exception. He got the benefit of the Republican impeachment effort in 1998, which actually meant that Democrats did better than expected in that midterm.
Right. Well, let's talk about the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate. Given the amount of money and time and volunteer energy that both Abdul El-Sayed and Haley Stevens spent on this closely watched race, should we be surprised that the voting margins turned out so close?
Well, we shouldn't be surprised in a historical sense because we're no stranger to close elections. There was a lot of engagement on both sides in the Democratic primary. We should be surprised in the sense that we had a series of polls at the end that really seemed to have missed badly. But Senate primaries, you know, have a lot of polling error, even on average. It's a hard kind of race to define the electorate, who's going to show up. There also could be a sign that sometimes enthusiasm gaps on the ground and online mean trouble for pollsters. It means that maybe the more enthused are more likely to participate in surveys.
I want to talk more about the polls in a bit, but before we do, let's run through just a couple of Michigan's important Democratic voting blocks and how they seem to have performed for the candidates compared to the past. Should we be surprised to see Wayne County and Detroit, Metro Detroit, giving Haley Stevens a majority?
No, there were signs in the pre-election polls and in other contests between the left and the center of the Democratic Party that black voters tend to support the more centrist candidate in many of those contests. You know, that was a big part of Haley Stevens' messaging, was tying herself to Barack Obama, specifically in the Detroit area. And that seems to have paid off, at least there.
I was also very interested in the results for Oakland County. I mean, this is a county where Haley Stevens has been serving in Congress. And it looks like El-Sayed had a pretty comfortable lead in the county overall. Granted, county lines and congressional districts don't completely overlay neatly. But were you very surprised at that, seeing, given the voters that Haley Stevens' congressional district have given to her in the past?
Well, it was going to be a contest because, yes, Haley Stevens had home court advantage there. But the more progressive parts of the party are the white educated parts of the party that are rising and concentrated in Oakland County. So it was sort of Stevens' geographic base, but El-Sayed's demographic base.
It's so unusual, that congressional race between Donovan McKinney and incumbent Sri Tandar. It's so unusual to see an incumbent knocked off. What are some factors that you think might have played into this race?
Well, this gets to a broader dynamic from last night, which is that it really matters who the candidates are and kind of the splits between the factions of the party. So the black establishment and the Bernie wing of the party here united around Donovan McKinney to go against the incumbent. That's highly unusual that you'd see sort of both of those factions in agreement and against the incumbent, but it has failed in the past because there's been a split among those people that were challenging Sri Tanadar. In the 7th congressional district in Lansing and East Lansing, instead we had a progressive candidate alone in their lane against two moderate candidates, both from outside of the district. That helped Will Lawrence succeed in that district.
Right. He's the progressive who will now go up against Republican incumbent Tom Barrett in the 7th. That district is such an interesting mix of counties. You've got Ingham County, which tends to lean blue, plus purplish Shiawassee and Clinton and Livingston, which I think both lean pretty Republican. What issues would you expect to be important in the general election in the 7th?
This is going to be a very interesting race because it's a toss-up district nationally, you know, one of 20 or 25 on everyone's radar. This is one of the few where there'll be a Bernie-endorsed candidate going up against a Republican incumbent in this toss-up district. And Will Lawrence really ran a Lansing and East Lansing, more urban part of the district focused primary. And that was very successful. But in order to knock off Tom Barrett, he'll have to gain some notoriety and share in the further out parts of the district that were the base for his opponents in the primary.
I have a question for you about a district over on the west side of the state in Grand Rapids, 3rd District, which is represented right now by Democrat Hillary Skolton. Her ascent to that office was seen as a pretty big deal for the Democratic Party. I do wonder, she campaigned pretty heavily on behalf of Haley Stevens for the Senate seat. And, you know, given some of the results that we're seeing out of Grand Rapids and Hillary Skolton's home turf, do you see any juxtaposition shaping up for the fall?
Well, perhaps not this year, but certainly a sign that the Democrats in her district aren't necessarily aligned with her positioning within the Democratic Party. But obviously it matters, you know, who is on the ballot. We saw that throughout Michigan. We had other races in Haley Stevens' district where there was a sort of a split between the more progressive candidates and the more centrist candidate was able to prevail. We had no real progressive in the John James district. So the Democrats got their preferred moderate candidate in that district. So, you know, it matters who's on the ballot. You can't win with no challenger. And so Hillary Skolton is in good shape for now. But the Grand Rapids results in the Senate race, you know, Kent County went for El Sayed to the same degree that Washtenaw County, Ann Arbor did. So that's
almost a 30% margin there.
Yeah, so that's really a sign that the Democratic Party in that part of the state, you know, is moving to the left.
I should mention Michigan 10 also. John James is leaving his congressional seat in the 10th district to run for governor. The primary gave us Michael Bouchard, the son of Oakland County's very well-known sheriff on the Republican side. And Democrats had a pretty competitive three-way race, and the winner is Christina Bertrand-Hines. This has been a pretty closely divided district in the past. Do you think that Democrats have a chance of flipping the 10th back this year?
Yes, this is their kind of next target in the state, one that if you believe that John James maybe had some personal vote in that district and that the winds are moving toward the Democrats this year, that they should have an option there. And in comparison to the 7th, the kind of establishment Democrats got their preferred pick and their preferred list of candidates in that district. So they will definitely view it as a potential pickup opportunity.
Matt, getting back to this year's polls and your point about the fact that in the Michigan Senate Democratic primary, there were just results all over the place over the past couple of weeks, some predicting strong leads for El Sayed and some for Stevens. I appreciate the fact that some news outlets are posting a whole range of polls. Oftentimes we get to see a poll's methodology. If I'm looking at polls in the weeks and months to come for the general election, what factors or what qualities should I look for to know if the results are really meaningful?
Well, the good news in the general election is that we get closer to the final results in the general. The bad news is that's because we all know that it's going to be close to 50-50 in the general election. So pollsters are usually able to model partisanship there. In a primary, we don't know who's going to vote. We don't know who's going to vote in which contest because we have no party registration in Michigan. And we just don't have those, you know, clear partisan labels to be able to figure out if we're getting a good sample or not. We did have one survey that had Stevens leading, the Detroit News survey, and then we had a lot of polls at the end that had showed big leads for El Sayed. They were modeling very different electorates. You know, they saw big changes in who would turn out by age, by education level, by race, and some of that didn't materialize. And Haley Stevens was doing better among your sort of traditional primary voting older electorate.
Matt Grossman directs the Michigan Political Leadership Program at MSU and also teaches on public policy and political science. Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Amid the global attention on Michigan's top ticket races, you may not have heard that a city in Washtenaw County has a new mayor for next year. In Ann Arbor, Youssef Rabi unseated an incumbent who's been part of city government for 18 years. Michigan Public's Tracy Samilton followed the race, and she joins us now. Hi, Trace.
Hello.
So can you introduce us to the contenders?
Well, outgoing mayor now, Chris Taylor, incumbent in that job for 12 years. He was mayor for 12 years of the 18 he served in government. He's a progressive Democrat. I would describe him as very civil, soft-spoken, not a terribly charismatic politician. And then you have Youssef Rabi. He's a Washtenaw County Commissioner, former state representative, a Democratic socialist, and he's about the opposite, I guess, in temperament to Taylor. He's an excellent public speaker, sometimes fiery, outspoken, sometimes confrontational.
What kinds of issues were they making their bones on in this race? Where did they put their stakes in the ground?
Chris Taylor ran on his record, which is, you know, very progressive record, pro-housing density, pro-affordable housing, and then balanced budgets, good governance, making sure city services are done and done well. He told me, look, local government is not a revolution.
Keep the trains running on time.
Yes. Yeah. Youssef Rabi ran on a democratic socialist platform, returning power to the people, ending tax incentives for developers, supporting unions, making the city more affordable for working people, low-income people. And he also said he was going to be more of a thorn in the side of the Trump administration and opposing Israel's military actions and opposing ICE.
So tell us a little bit about the results. It looks like it wasn't terribly close.
No, it really wasn't. Rabi won pretty handily, 55% to Taylor's 44%. And that's even though Taylor had some pretty high-profile endorsements, including from Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
It kind of looks like a huge rebuke to the establishment, Tracy. Can you maybe tell us about some of the factors that you think played into the race?
I think Chris Taylor was a lightning rod, to put it succinctly, for all the changes that a sizable number of residents just hate. The high rises, there's new protected bike lanes, traffic calming measures to slow cars down and make the city more pedestrian and bike friendly. And, you know, I think that dislike transferred over to Taylor at times. He was accused of somehow being in the pocket of high-rise developers, for example. You know, and he was in office a long time, and
right.
It's just not unusual to see a politician's popularity go down the longer they're in office. And I definitely think there were quite a few people who would have voted for anybody but Chris Taylor.
So now Youssef Rabi has succeeded. How much leeway do you think he will have as the city's mayor to change course on some of the issues that he talked about in city policy? I know that there's a really controversial rezoning in the works to increase housing density that could even include three-story multifamily projects in some residential areas.
Well, it is really important to note that only one of the four city council candidates that were on the ballot that Rabi endorsed, only one of them was elected. So that council member and Rabi could be the minority voice on some issues going forward. You know, the Planning Commission is in charge of that rezoning, and the mayor has limited ability to change who serves on the commission. He puts the candidates forward, but the city council says yay or nay. So he may not have a whole lot of power to, say, slow down on housing density.
Mm-hmm. Tracy, do you happen to know if this is the first time a Democratic socialist has been elected mayor in Ann Arbor? I mean, the city's got a long tradition of activist politics.
I think it probably is. I don't know for sure because back when I came here in 1980, I did not pay attention to politics.
You were yeah. just a wee thing.
There are Republicans in Ann Arbor who would say, "Oh yeah, in name only."
Right. Hey, just as a to take this to a bit bigger picture, this is one smallish town in the corner of Michigan. Admittedly, it's the home of a big state school. It's the home of a politically powerful state school. But is there anything that you think this year's mayoral primary, which among Democrats is effectively the election, is there anything you think this might tell us about what's going on among voters?
You know, I think this is going to get a lot of national pundits asking that question. The story could be, oh, look, another Democratic socialist just got elected, right? But I really think Robbie's political views were only part of the reason and not the main part why he was elected.
Tracy Samuelton reporting for Michigan Public. You can read some of her prior coverage on this race at the Michigan Public website. That's michiganpublic.org. Tracy, thank you so much.
Happy to be here.
That's all for Stateside for today. Our show is produced by April Van Buren, Ronia Kabansug, and Michelle Jokishpolo. Our senior producer is Mercedes Mejia, and the executive producer of Stateside is Laura Weber Davis. Our interns are Nicholas Alumkal, Isabella Jacob, Jaden Jefferson, and Yeneva Sise. Our show is a production of Michigan Public. We're a broadcast service of the University of Michigan. It's Just Politics is directly ahead with Zoe Clark and Rick Pluta. We'll see you tomorrow.